This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Genesis, chapter 1.
It was the one day that God didn't say it was good, and the question follows, why? It could be that God knew, he obviously knew, but it could be the reason he didn't say the second day was good was because he knew that that vapor canopy that he had created was very soon going to be used to judge the world. Perhaps that brought sorrow to his heart. He also knew, he just created the atmosphere. He also knew that later Satan would become what? The prince of the power of the air, the Bible calls him, or the atmosphere. There's another possible reason why he doesn't say the second day is good that we'll get to later if we have time. Verse 9 records day 3. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. God corrals the seas, and he produces dry land. Now remember, on day 1, God separates light from dark. On day 2, he separates the waters from under the firmament from the waters above the firmament, the hydrosphere and the atmosphere. Now on day 3, he separates the sea and the land. In other words, God establishes boundaries. All throughout this first chapter, he's establishing boundaries. And when he does, he says that it was good. I think we need to remind ourselves that boundaries are a good thing. Without them, life would be dangerous, wouldn't it? It would be chaotic for sure. Boundaries bring order to our lives. Boundaries are safety nets for our lives. Hey, don't resent the boundaries that God has placed around your life. They're there for your good. Verse 11 tells us, "Then God said, 'Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth.' And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good." The grasses, the herbs, the trees, they didn't evolve. Everything was created according to its kind. And so the evening and the morning were the third day. I believe that the third day marked a decisive victory in this battle between God and Satan over creation. Think about it. Satan would have fought vigorously against God over the emergence of this dry ground. And why? Well, if the earth was covered with water, there would be no dirt for God to be able to create man. And so he wanted to keep the earth shrouded in water. And with the emergence of the land, with the emergence of the dry dirt, God was able to go further with his plans of creating you and me. It must have been a tremendous battle during the third day, and yet God won the victory. It's interesting. It reminds us of a third day, thousands of years later, when another decisive victory was won on the third day. Jesus rose from the dead. On the third day, the Bible calls him too the first fruits of our resurrection. Again, life appeared on the third day. It's amazing how the creation story has all kinds of level of meaning to it. It even speaks of our redemption and our salvation today. Verse 14 tells us, "Then God said, 'Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth.' And it was so." On day 1, God unveiled and released this light. The photons bathed the universe with light. On day 4, he now harnesses that light and concentrates them in the sun and in the stars. We're told then God made 2 great lights. Of course, they were the sun and the moon, the greater light, the sun, to rule the day, and the lesser light, the moon, to rule the night. It's interesting, the ancients had it reversed. Because of their apparent size in the sky, they thought the moon was the greater light, and the sun was the lesser. The Bible, though, had it right all along. Verse 16 says, He made the stars also. Modern astronomy tells us that there are about 100 billion trillion stars and 100 trillion galaxies. And there are probably just about that many books offering an explanation as to their formation. Here is a subject of intense human interest, the formation of the stars. And yet the Bible gives it just a 5-word explanation. He made the stars also. Wouldn't you have liked more information? God, tell us a little bit more about the stars. But it just goes to prove that our priorities are not God's priorities, are they? The Bible gives 5 little words to the formation of the stars, whereas it devotes 50 chapters to the discussion of the tabernacle, the place where God met with His people Israel. You know, we're preoccupied with things like creation, whereas God is far more concerned with redemption, with the recreation He wants to work in our hearts. Well, verse 17 says, God set them, the sun, the moon, the stars, in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the 4th day. Notice back in verse 17, God sets the stars in the firmament. In other words, He gives them their orbits. And then He tells us in verse 14 that they'll be for signs and for seasons. Now, we know about the seasons, but what about the signs? The stars, the sun and the moon in the sky, in their orbits, as signs. There is a theory that before it was corrupted by Satan, the zodiac actually preached the gospel of Jesus Christ. Psalm 147, verse 4 tells us, God counts the number of the stars. He calls them all by name. Isn't that interesting? Adam named the animals, but God has named the stars. The zodiac, of course, is the path that the earth travels through the stars. Today, it begins with Aries. But originally, the zodiac began with Virgo. And isn't it interesting that the gospel begins when a virgin conceives and brings forth a child? Jesus came the first time through a virgin. But Revelation tells us that when He comes the second time, He'll be the Lion of the tribe of Judah. He'll come as a lion. And isn't it interesting that the last on the ancient zodiac, the last sign was Leo the lion. It began with Virgo. It ends with Leo. Jesus comes the first time through a virgin. He'll come the second time as the Lion of the tribe of Judah. And it's a very interesting study to look at how the zodiac may have at one time preached the gospel. Don't misunderstand, Satan has definitely corrupted the zodiac today, and the Bible forbids us from consulting the stars in any manner. But originally, the stars were put there, God says, as signs. Let me make one more point about the creation of the stars. One reason astronomers assume that the universe is, 15, 20 billion, it always changes, by the way, but 15, 20 billion years old, is the distance between the earth and the stars. There are stars millions of light years away. A light year is the distance that light travels in a year. If we see a star 4 billion light years away, then the earth needs to be at least 4 billion years old, or so they say. But let me ask you a question. How many of you have ever thrown a roll of toilet paper? Now, this is where you got to dig back in your past, back in those high school days, and you got to be honest. How many of you have ever thrown a roll of toilet paper? Yep, I have. I got to admit it, I have. Most of you have, if you'll be honest. Think of it this way. God may have hurled the stars into their orbits as if He were unrolling the light, as if He were throwing a roll of toilet paper. Starlight could have been created in transit, either before or as the star itself was created. If that were the case, it would really change a lot of these measuring sticks that we use. There are other possibilities that also preclude an old earth. How do we know that the speed of light travels at the same rate throughout the universe? There may be warps out there in space somewhere where the speed of light dramatically accelerates. And how do we know that the speed of light has been consistent over time? There's an Australian scientist by the name of Barry Setterfield who's done some amazing research that suggests that the speed of light may have decayed over time. He contends that light traveled four times faster in the days of Abraham than it does today. You see, I'm just saying there's a whole lot that we don't know. You see, the reason men are so quick to believe in evolution is it allows them an excuse. If you admit there's a God, a higher authority, you've got to submit to Him. There's somebody you're accountable to. And so if you can eliminate God from the equation, you can do as you please. It's more a moral issue than it is a scientific one. There's evidence out there to support the existence of God, certainly. Verse 20, then God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens. God has formed the earth. Now He begins to fill the earth with life. So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. God fills the sky with birds. He fills the fish, the seas with fish. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. And so the evening and the morning were the fifth day. On day six, God creates the creepy crawlers, the insects, and the land animals. Verse 24. Then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. 10 times in Genesis chapter 1, we're told that God created according to its kind. It's true that God created in life's genetic makeup a degree of flexibility. Living things can adapt to their environment. These adaptations are called mutations. But there are limits to these adaptations. The genetic structure of living things is fixed. It's been fixed by God so that life produces only within its natural family or its kinds. In other words, mutations are possible, certainly, but not transmutations. Things adapt to their environment, but things don't change out of their kind and out of their family to another kind or to another family. A fish doesn't become a bird. Mutations, yes. Transmutations, no. Thank the Lord for mutations. All my kids have turned out better looking than me. I'm thankful for mutations. But they're still Adamses. Granted, at times they act like monkeys, but they're still Adamses. And they're going to reproduce Adamses themselves, every generation, according to its kind. You see, this is the great failure of evolution. With all the fossils that have been found, there's a glaring absence of transitional forms. In other words, the missing link is still missing. It's because it's not there. God created everything after its kind. In just 6 days, God reassembles the earth and He makes it fit for His crowning creation, man. Which brings up an interesting question. Were the 6 days of creation literal 24-hour days? Or were they long periods of time or ages? Well, the Hebrew word for day or yom appears 1,425 times in the Old Testament. And it gets translated 51 different ways. So from the word yom, we can't really be dogmatic. But if you take these days as long geological ages of millions of years, you've got problems. For example, plants are created on the third day. That requires the pollination of insects to survive, but the insects don't appear until day five. If the 2 days are separated by millions of years, these kinds of plants could have never survived. I personally believe that the language suggests 6 24-hour periods of time. To me, the phrase the evening and the morning support that. Here's another question. How long ago did these 6 days occur? Was it 4.5 billion years ago? And again, no one knows. The only person that was there at the time was God, and He's chosen not to date it. The age of the earth depends on how long of a time gap exists between Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. Was it hours? Or was it billions of years? It's possible that the universe is quite old, but the reassembling of the earth and the creation of mankind is a recent event. Recorded human history and the Bible's genealogies can only track back maybe 6,000, perhaps 10,000 years. Actually, I believe that there are scientific reasons to believe in a very young earth, an earth that is even as young as 10,000 years old. If the speed of light has decayed over time, then it would throw off all of the atomic clocks and the radioactive dating techniques that we hold so dear. Carbon-14 and its companions have their problems anyway. There are varying decay rates among these compositions. There are assumptions about initial compositions and seepage possibilities all can contaminate results. All of these things have their problems, especially when it comes to trying to date very old ages. Other factors, though, point to a young earth. The decay of the earth's magnetic field, the mineral composition of the oceans, the existence of short period comets, all also support the idea of a young earth. It's interesting, when Bob Hope interviewed Neil Armstrong, he asked the first moonwalker, before your historic mission, what was your greatest fear? Armstrong said that the astronauts had been warned that there would be a huge layer of loosely compacted debris on the moon's surface. Scientists assumed that after billions of years and no protective atmosphere, the moon would have been quite a dusty place. And this is why the NASA lunar module, you remember it in your mind, it had those long legs with the pads at the end, but they had those long legs off the capsule that set it up very high, and there was a ladder they had to climb up to. Scientists assumed that after these billions of years, there would be this dust that had accumulated on the moon. And they feared that the lunar module would sink when it hit the ground, and so they put it up on stilts. Instead, though, there was so little dust that Armstrong had difficulty hammering the American flag into the hard surface. The moon was covered not with billions of years of dust, or even millions, but just a few thousand years of cosmic dust. There's another point to consider. How old did Adam look the day after his creation? He was 1 day old, but he was the perfect human specimen. He probably had the body of a 46-year-old, I suppose, you know. He was created in maturity. Remember the trees in the Garden of Eden? They also appeared in mature form. They were created with fruit on their branches. No doubt God created eggs with yolks. The trees in the Garden of Eden probably had annular rings. Question always comes up, did Adam have a belly button? If he did, it was an example of the appearance of age. And where there appears to be physical evidence for lengthy ages or for billions of years, it's possible that it's the result of God creating the earth in a state of maturity. Well, in verse 26, the stage is set for the capstone of creation. Earth systems have been reformed and refilled to support human life. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. all of life was created according to its kind. The offspring reflects the parent. But God goes one step further with humanity. We alone are made in God's image. We not only reflect the image of our earthly Father, but we also resemble our heavenly Father. This makes us unique. Humanity is made in the image of God, and it's true in numerous ways. Spiritually, we're a spiritual being, just as God is. We're a moral being. We're rational beings. We're creative beings, just as God is creative. Both God and man are relational. We enjoy fellowship. Both are self-determining. We make our own choices. But I think, first and foremost, humans were made in God's image in that we were made to rule. In verses 28 and 29, God tells the man and the woman and every human thereafter, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be for food. God spent 6 days reforming and refilling the earth to support the creature that he loved most and that he made in his image. Earth was made for man. What I'm about to say is not very politically correct today, especially not in environmental circles. But the flora and the fauna, the fish and the fowl, they were all made, guys, for our survival and for our enjoyment. We shouldn't abuse nature, certainly, but nature is ours to use for the good of mankind. You see, man was given dominion over the earth. We were given authority to rule over creation, to subdue the creation to our benefit. And this understanding is the difference between Western civilization and Eastern civilization. The West, where we live, reared on the Judeo-Christian ethic. We've seen advances through science. We've seen technology expand. We've learned to harness nature for our own benefit. And why? Because the Bible teaches that man is separate from nature. And it's our job, our God-given duty, to subdue nature and to use it for our benefit. That's why we live in such a prosperous, place where we have so many conveniences at our fingertips. Whereas, in the East, it's dominated by pantheism. The belief that man is part of nature, that man is one with nature, and rather than subdue nature, the role of man is to harmonize with his surroundings. And this ultimately is why cows roam freely in India and eat the crops while the people die of starvation. Hinduism teaches its adherents to deify nature rather than to subdue it. It's a society's religion that either holds it back or motivates its development. Be thankful you were born in a nation that's based on Jewish and Christian and biblical thought. Verse 30 tells us, also, to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food, and it was so. Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. In 6 days, God reformed and refilled planet Earth, placed the object of his affections on its throne, and on the seventh day he rested. And as we'll find out in chapter 2, the plot thickens.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.